The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome into a brand new podcast for Tony Curry Radio. This is Conversations That Nobody Wants to Have, starring myself, David Sears, and my partner, Brandon Triola, live from New York City. Yeah, or I'm sorry, Brooklyn.
From Brooklyn. You know, you got to get it right, man. You got to say Brooklyn.
From Brooklyn. This is a political podcast, but we're looking at problems that people don't really want to talk about. Brandon is a bleeding heart liberal. I am a moderate who leans conservative, but understands you do have to have some social safety nets and stuff. So, let's get to know each other. Brandon, give us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So, I'm 42. I was born and raised in Birmingham, Alabama. I actually grew up evangelical Christian. Very conservative. I grew up going to Briarwood Presbyterian Church, which is now, I call it Trump headquarters. And then I also went, I grew up going to a smaller church called Altadena Valley, both conservative PCA. I am an actor, writer, director. I am a teacher, not by choice, but by necessity. Whenever I'm asked in an interview, you know, why did you choose teaching? I literally have said this. I've always told the principal, a lack of options and a failure at other pursuits of life. And that's literally gotten me the job sometimes. I do enjoy aspects about teaching, but it's not really my thing so much anymore. But, you know, I got the wife and the kids, so I got to, you know, you got to do what you got to do. So grew up in Birmingham, was there most of my life. I lived in New York City, my early 20s. So did my wife. We were not together then. We were both doing the acting thing up there. I worked at the Jekyll and Hyde Club in Manhattan, which was on Sixth Avenue, Avenue of Americas. Was a bartender and then worked there at the theater. Did a little bit of, television up here, mostly background work, and then went back, to school. I went back to Birmingham right around my mid-20s, close to 30. Decided, like, you know, I love the arts, but I need a stable paycheck. So I decided to go into teaching, finished my undergrad in communications, theater, and journalism at UAB, and then went back there and did my master's in English and secondary education. And then for the last, so I'll be going into my 14th year of teaching in a couple of weeks. So I've been teaching for the past 14 years. I've taught in Birmingham, taught in South Carolina, in Hilton Head, South Carolina, and then the last 6 years here in Brooklyn, in Canarsie. I've taught in Canarsie, Brooklyn. I've also taught in Queens, Jamaica, Queens. These are like the two most difficult neighborhoods, some of the most difficult neighborhoods. Excuse me, I don't want to say difficult, challenging neighborhoods to teach in both the boroughs of Brooklyn and Queens. And then now currently I'm at the Urban Assembly School of Law and Justice. It's a mouthful in downtown Brooklyn. So 6 years teaching here in New York City, total three different schools. And then the rest in Birmingham and South Carolina. I'm married. I've been married for 7 years. I have two wonderful children, 3 and 5 years old. And I'm tired all the time.
Plus, you got to mention what you're doing right now with Brooklyn Start.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm still reeling with that. So yeah. So for the past, so when TikTok got big in 2020, I started doing some content on there. We went into, schools went remote, which was a joke. I didn't teach for basically a year. During that time, you know, as I was leaving, I actually found some kids that were doing this new app called TikTok. And I was like, what is this? And they're like, it's a dancing app. And I was like, that's weird. What's a dancing app? Went home, got on it, saw that it was like all about editing and making films. I've been doing that since I was 14 years old. Started to do some like content, mostly comedy stuff about being a teacher and parenting. And then it kind of turned into, because I was at an art school in Canarsie, Brooklyn, which was an art school in name, but in no way had the funding, the space or anything like that. I'm sure we'll talk about New York City at some point. But when I, you know, it wasn't really a theater art school. And so the students and I were always so pissed about it. I was like, why don't we make a show about a crappy theater art school? And we did. And we got like all this following on TikTok, you know, over 2 years, we got up to about a little bit over 80,000 followers. And in doing so, my wife and I started to create this show that was about the New York City education system, how it's the most segregated system in the country, right up there with Chicago. You know, we started talking about, you know, life in Brooklyn, what it's like to be a person, a white person like myself, who lives mostly in a community that's full of people of color. My children attend schools where they're minorities as white people. And then the schools that both my wife and I teach at are 100% students of color. So just that out of element thing combined with some other people I talked with, we came up with a script idea and we called it a show concept. We called it Brooklyn Start. And we started filming these short episodes on TikTok, getting more followers. Like I said, we got up to 80,000. And we decided we wanted to make a trailer for the show concept to be able to pitch to streaming services and networks. So we spent the last 6 months raising about $10,000. We finally hit our goal this summer. And we filmed about a 10-minute trailer just a couple of weeks ago over 3 days that basically covered the whole concept of the show. And, you know, once we're still actually in the process of editing it right now, but once it's done, we're going to distribute it through social media and then also, through some showrunner and producer festivals. And, you know, hopefully we'll see what happens. Maybe we'll get picked up if we get a lucky lightning strike or something. But yeah, all the entire show, I've used students that I've worked with in the show. I've cast them, paid them. You know, I've got a production company here called Rethink Films that we filmed it. And yeah, so we're just trying to see where it's going to go from there.
There we go. Now, I have a similar background. I'm from originally Kissimmee, Florida, moved to Vestavia in 96, grew up Southern Baptist at Shades Mountain Baptist Church. Still an evangelical, even though I don't really like what's going on with a lot of the SBC. I like some of the changes.
We're going to wake you up. We're going to wake you up, David.
There are a group of people that are trying to make changes, trying to hold people accountable. And I'm very supportive of that. I'm very much different from Brandon. Brandon's very much a pessimist. I'm pretty much an optimist. I do believe that you have to work with the system. Brandon wants to burn the system down. So I think
I don't know if that's entirely accurate. I want to burn parts of, don't we all want to burn parts of the system down?
Part of it does need reform. I used to work in political talk radio from 2011 to 2021. That's how I got to know Brandon. He was a caller. He was a troll. He loved to instigate, stir the pot.
I was helping with ratings.
I was helping Matt Murphy with ratings. And one day he gave me his last name when we were going to have him in studio. I go, you know, I know a Natalie Triola and a Kristen Triola. I went to school with them at Alabama. He goes, no shit, those are my sisters. Yep. So, I ended up knowing Brandon's sisters before I knew Brandon. And then Brandon and I became friends on Facebook. We shoot each other messages and talk a lot about politics. Brandon, very liberal. Like I said, I'm moderate. I'm nowhere near as conservative as a lot of the stuff on the radio station. Totally disagree with a lot of stuff they do and say.
I would say you're a critical thinker, though. I mean, I think that's the difference. And sorry, I did interrupt. I know we're going to get into this, but I think that's the big difference is people on different sides of the aisle. We want to have the conversations. Just be a critical thinker, you know. And I think that's something that you and I both respect about one another. Is like any conversation I've gotten into, I'm like, dude, he's a critical thinker, regardless of the outcome. Of where he lands.
There was one conversation we were having about guns, and I misunderstood what you said about accidents, and I thought accidents meant like any type of accident, like falling off a ladder and stuff. You're like, no, accidental shootings. Like, oh, my bad. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that. And you're like, dude, it's okay. But you were actually impressed that I was admitting I was wrong and misunderstanding it, which I think a lot of people in this day and age don't really do. If they're wrong, they're going to dig their heels in and not admit they're wrong. And I think that's part of what this whole podcast is about.
Right.
Brandon and I, we're not going to change each other's minds, but we will open the doors to different pathways of thought. I read a lot. Right now I'm reading 4 books. One of them, Carl Sagan's The Cosmos.
You're reading 4 books like simultaneously?
It makes it so much easier on a Kindle. So, and it's kind of like, 2 of them are fiction.
How do you do that, man?
2 of them are fiction. Like I'm reading the complete works of H.P. Lovecraft. So okay. I'll read a, it's over 1500 pages because it's the complete works. So I'll read one story a night. Then I've rediscovered some of the stuff I love from my childhood. Bruce Koval, My Teacher is an Alien series. So I've just been reading a little bit of that. Reading, like I said, Carl Sagan's The Cosmos. And then I'm reading another book called Escape from Suckville by Brett McCade. He is a sports psychologist. And it's,
is that a real town?
It is. Suckville? It is.
It's, that's a real town.
It's close to Auburn.
And it's really called Suckville?
No. No.
I was about to, well, no, I believed you for a second. I was like, what, I mean, what idiot came up with that name?
No. It's
like, I think I got a way to get people to move here. I really do.
Suckville is a place when your mind, when you're in a downward spiral, when everything just seems to go wrong. You can't escape. The changes you're trying to make don't seem to work. You're just frustrated. And,
oh yeah, I know that place.
But it's getting out of there.
I visited.
Yeah. It's really interesting book. He's been brought it. The reason I know about him is because Nick Saban brought him in to talk to the football team several times when they would lose a game and start a little downward spiral. He would bring in Brett McCabe to help them think through their problems. And I was like, you know, if it worked for Nick Saban, it could work for me.
I'm telling you, as many disagreements we have or we're going to have, I think what will always bring us back together will be Nick Saban.
Exactly.
Roll Tide. That's what he does. That's what Roll Tide. That's what he does for people.
I'm so disappointed. I would have voted for him. And what's the Senator Manchin?
Oh, I'd vote for him. He's a Democrat.
Saban Manchin, 2024. There you go.
That's nice.
But all in all,
I think my dad's going to write him in for the third time in a row this year.
I may do that. You know what?
My dad's voted for Nick Saban in 2016, 2020, and there's no doubt in my mind he's going to run it for 2024. And he's going to be like, well, now he has the time.
He does.
He's got so much free time. Of course he's going to do this.
You imagine Nick Saban just having a Saban meltdown on Pelosi and what's the dude? The Republican House Majority Leader.
McConnell? I know you're talking. Now you're talking about him. I forgot him.
McConnell's the Senate majority leader, it's not a majority.
Minority.
Yeah. But
what is his name? I've gone blank.
It's all right. We're old. We're 40. You're 42. I'm about to be 42. Our mind's shot.
Do you have kids? Well, you don't have kids yet.
No, we can't. So.
Okay. Are you guys, is that something that you want them?
We try.
Sorry, I know we just got into a very serious subject.
Yeah, we tried. Unfortunately, my stuff doesn't work the way it's supposed to. Right now, between my wife being a nonprofit worker and me kind of bouncing around jobs, you just don't have the money to go through the adoption process. Because that is
we could do a whole show on that crap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would like to, because we've got a topic list, and one of them is people say they're pro-life when they really mean they're pro-birth. That's going to be a fun topic because there's a lot that goes on. And part of what has changed the way I've thought about life. When I left the radio station, I kind of bounced around jobs, but I've worked a lot with the public, and Walker County is the poorest county in North Alabama. And there are a lot of issues here that don't get addressed because there is no social safety net. Some of the worst teeth in Alabama is here. We have a lot of dental issues, no real dental care. Cause you know, dental and vision is not part of healthcare. They're add-ons.
Of course not.
So your teeth and eyes aren't separate, but there's a great clinic here called the Capstone Clinic that does a lot with the underprivileged and people that can't afford healthcare, but they're stretched to the max and they're underfunded. And it's just, there's a lot that opened my eyes. One of the women I worked with, her husband was a coal miner who lost part of his leg and is on disability now. And they're having to struggle to make ends meet because he can't work anymore. And it's just like, why is there no way to help? Disability is a joke. It's barely.
Yeah.
So basically I kind of got my eyes open.
I know my mom's been on it for a long time. It's a joke.
I know. See, that's kind of opened my eyes. And I think that's something that a lot of people lose sight of is that,
go ahead.
It's that we think everything's like us. We all have our little bubble in Vestavia or Mount Brook or Hoover. And we don't really understand that the Black Belt of Alabama is ridiculously poor because all the manufacturing left. There's no real job, no real escape. Walker County is pretty much a coal mining county, and there are issues with that now that they're trying to get the Green New Deal. And a lot of these people have been doing this for 20, 30 years, never went to college. They went out of high school straight to the mines. They don't know anything else. They don't want to go to college. So it's just a lot of stuff going on right now that opened my eyes just to see how Walker County and how a lot of the real world, I guess, outside the bubble works. And it's very problematic to me that there's nothing for these people. These people need healthcare. These people need not just, like I said, not just healthcare, but like dental and vision. Lots of people that are struggling by, my eyes have been opened to public housing and how there's really no escape from it. Cause when you start earning more money, they increase your rent, not allowing you to save. So it's just like there's a bunch of systems that need an overhaul. And, I went from
start. We can agree on that, but that's that will be a point of agreement. I know that doesn't make good radio, but,
well, that's all right. That's the part of this podcast. So we're going to agree on some stuff. We may disagree on how to get a solution to it, but we both know there are a lot of problems that need help. A lot of people that need help, and where various areas of society let them down. One of them, I think our next show we're going to do about this is how Christianity today is so far from what Jesus preached. That's going to be our next show, our first real topic show.
Something light. Good.
Yeah. You know, it's easy.
Nice and light. Yeah. It's easy.
It's easy. But how basically if Paul were still alive today, the entire nation would receive letters for each individual church from Paul. Like, what are you doing? Yeah.
Probably.
So, but that's kind of what this podcast is going to be. We're going to take difficult topics. We're going to talk. We're not going to yell. We may raise our voice, but we're not going to yell. I know that doesn't make good radio.
I think it goes back to what you're saying. One of the reasons when you messaged me and you're like, hey, let's do this. Let's see what we can get going. I mean, I was on board instantly because I feel, you know this, and everyone else will hear about it soon, my loathing and hatred for Trump. The past 10 years, I mean, no matter what side you're on, everyone can agree that it's ridiculous. It's got to a point, you know, and I'm sure we'll get into this, even with cancel culture and trying to do the gotchas and just the quick judgments, the snap judgments. Oh, hey, I saw a clip on social media. So I know everything about this person now. I think, you know, and again, this is one of the reasons why we created our show, Brooklyn Start, is we are not communicating with one another. I mean, ironically, we're using technology to communicate, but ironically, and, you know, the paradox of it all is that it has also made us completely 100% separate from each other. We've isolated ourselves. I mean, the students I teach today, they have no idea. I mean, of course, we're still dealing with the effects of the pandemic, but they have no idea how to relate to one another in person. And they want it. Don't get me wrong. They want it. But it's just, you know, you and I, we were part of the last generation that grew up analog and digital. Yep. It's all digital. All the kids from now on, my kids, I feel like they were born knowing how to do everything that's digital.
It was. And I think that's good what you brought up. We are so used to our echo chambers about on social media. I'm one of the few people that have friends that are far left and far right. I have some friends that are just like, meme lords that love, was it Pepe the Frog and all that stuff on 4chan? They're so far that way. And then I have friends that just are so far left that think, socialism and communism are a great idea and we should attempt to try that. And I think that's lost on a lot of people. A lot of people tend to only have friends who think alike. They don't really try to engage with other people. And it's difficult to engage because tone is lost in a little blurb on Facebook or Twitter. And just actually meeting face to face with someone, talking with them about stuff is not.
And I actually blame a lot of this on Trump too. I do.
You know what?
I blame a lot of it on him.
Well, I think, honestly, I think the way that it all started, it was intense under Bush W. It was intense.
It was very intense.
And then around 2007, 2008, Facebook launched to everybody.
Yeah.
And then that was along the time of Obama. So when Facebook came along with Obama, all the stuff about the birth certificate, all stuff about him being a secret Muslim, a lot of that was able to spread because it was unchecked on Facebook. And a lot of people were able to share these falsities. And then if you disagreed with them, I'm blocking you. And they'd seek further communities, insulation.
Well, it's just so funny to me, because if you go back and you look at the debate between McCain and Obama, which I was, Obama was the first Democrat that I voted for. You know, when you grow up, most of the time we mirror the politics of our parents, you know, so first time around, the first time I could vote, I voted for McCain in the primaries. And then I voted for George W. Bush when he got the nomination. I voted for him a second time. And the first time I was fine with it. The second time I felt like an idiot because I was not educated enough to see how manufactured the war in Iraq and Afghanistan was, how it had nothing to do with WMDs, how it was about basically revenge for Saddam, how, you know, W was basically a puppet to Cheney and Rumsfeld and just kind of, you know, did what they told him to do. And then, you know, when I got to Obama, it was like, oh, my God, this guy can speak so well. And he seems pretty, you know, they marketed him pretty well down the middle. And I liked him. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to vote for him. I voted for him again. I voted for Clinton in 16. But yeah, I really feel like if you go back and you look at those debates between McCain and Obama or Romney and Obama, they are so civil. They are so respectful of one another.
The last Republican I voted for without holding my nose is Romney. I really liked Romney.
I'd be fine with a Romney president.
I thought he would have been a good president. I think his problem was he went so hard on the first debate. He rested on his laurels and didn't keep up the intensity, which he needed to. He won the first quarter and then cruised the rest of the game and lost the game. But I think that when Trump came along in 2015 and he started his name calling, he started just flat out lies. And
he was babbling. He was just babbling. So, babbling lies, man.
Yeah. The civility was lost and the rhetoric from each side was ratcheted up to the extreme. And you've got the.
Well, that's where you and I are going to disagree on that. That's where you and I are going to disagree. I see Trump as the catalyst. I see everything else as the response to the catalyst. Trump started with the name calling. Trump started with the brazen lies, the birtherism, the racism. He started that. Everything, and again, you and I will probably have a point of contention here, but everything beyond that is now a response. He said, this is where the game is, this is where the level is.
And you thought the Democrats brought it up to that level?
I think they do. I think they did respond to that level, but I think the Democrats responded to him with, first of all, trying to take the high road. To be honest right now, the Democratic Party looks like the unifying party. And even through all the years of Trump, where they, no matter what you say, you can claim they took some low shots. I still think that they took the higher road. They were playing the game that Trump set up, that his base bought into. I mean, it all starts with him. The last decade has been just draining for everybody. And how you can't pinpoint that the main catalyst for that is Trump. Because, I mean, come on. I mean, you have to admit, we saw racism coming out like crazy once
during Obama? Oh, yeah.
And it was rampant through the Republican Party.
I remember thinking, I don't know if he's going to survive his 4 years without some white supremacist taking a shot at him.
And, yeah, I thought that was going to happen, too.
And I really thought within the first 4 years, someone was going to make an attempt on him. Very grateful no one didn't. I'm not calling for it whatsoever. Not saying he should have been assassinated. I was very concerned. And Black-ish did a great show about that when he was elected. When Anthony Mackie talked about how scared he was when Obama got out of the limo to walk the final mile to the White House on Inauguration Day. How scared he was someone was going to ruin that moment for Black America. And I hadn't thought of it that way, but I was concerned that a white supremacist was going to take a shot at him. And I didn't realize how I knew it was important for America, but I didn't realize how important it was for Black America at that moment.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's, and I think that's something, and again, like I said, I'm no great educator on the Black experience. All I have is what I've experienced.
You white guy? Yeah.
I know, right?
Is that color? Is that blacksplaining if a white guy tries to do it? Or is that white?
I think it would be blacksplaining. But again, look, I got involved in Black Lives Matter. I got involved in the movement before it became this corporate calling card when it was grassroots, and I was participating in stuff. And because and I remember having a conversation with someone. I was like, "What does white America need to do?" And it's a person of color, and they just looked at me and said, "Listen." And it was so eye-opening to me. Listen, just listen. I mean, I've never considered myself a racist guy. But now, having worked and lived in a community of mostly color for the past 6 years, I'm realizing that main problem is that everyone's got a different definition of what racism is. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the Webster's Dictionary of Racism, well, that's great. But a white man came up with that definition.
No, I agree.
White man gets to, I think I'm trying to piggyback off of what you're saying is that what Black Lives Matter, I feel, did, which was so positive, was got the white suburban person like myself who grew up. Did you grow up in the suburbs? I don't know if you grew up in the suburbs.
Yeah, Vesavia.
Yeah. Okay. So I grew up in Hoover. We grew up in some pretty privileged suburbs in America, and we knew what we knew. And no one has ever blamed me for the life that I've grown up or said, "Hey, this is what you know." But they had said, "Okay, you're in a new situation now. You got to do some listening and learning." And by doing that, I was like, "Oh, okay. Racism is not just, hey, one race is superior to the other. It's been systemic throughout our country. We can point to programs. We can point to how redlining, it's still around today." Yeah, redlining. The whole creation of the suburbs is born from racist ideas. Get away from the urban areas where all the Black people are.
The internet,
and let white people.
The interstate system going through Black.
Yeah, the interstate system. Even Birmingham itself, it's got its over the mountain communities, right? So, and it's the same way here in New York, right? I mean, there are white parts of Brooklyn still. There are very Trumpish parts of Brooklyn that might surprise people. New York City, Staten Island,
Long Island
is Trump land for the most part. Long Island, those places are the Hoovers, the Vestavia, the Homewoods. Those are those places up here. So it's, and again, this is what I've learned from living up here, is it's the same everywhere. It is the same everywhere. It's just pockets, and what pocket you find yourself in. And when I found myself living in mostly a community of color, my kids attending schools where they're minorities, and most of the students are students of color. My wife and I both teach at schools that are 100% students of color. When you get involved in a culture, you start to listen and you start to see, oh, that's true. And also this other thing is true. It just depends on the prism that you're looking at. The prism focuses on one particular color blue or one particular color red. And when you can combine them all together, you start to get a little bit of inkling of an understanding. And, and circling back around how this all connects to Trump is, you looked at Obama. We had 8 years of a great orator. He's our first social media president. He's using all the apps that, he was doing entertainment talk shows more than any president. Or I'd seen any president do.
No, he was the first one to do late night talk show.
Yeah, he was that first guy. And what you see with Trump did that same type of stuff. But history has always been two steps forward, one step back. And I think we saw 8 years of progress in the terms of okay, we have a Black man in charge of America for the first time in history. And because of how America is, had to toe the line, I think, a lot more down the center than he wanted to.
He got dragged into stuff he didn't want to get dragged into. And he was made the face. He was made the face of things that I don't necessarily think he wanted to do. Again, he was trying to not get involved in the gay marriage debate. And then Joe opens his mouth about it and drags Obama right into it. He's like, shit. So I think he did a great job for what he was trying to do. I don't think he accomplished everything. I think his biggest regret is the ACA didn't get to where he wanted it to get. He tried to make you half pregnant instead of fully pregnant. But I think he dealt with a lot of issues because the Republicans are more about party loyalty than they are about what's doing best for America. And I think that
I think they are now. History tells a completely different story. You're right. But I think
they became obstructionists under Obama, and that really hurt a lot of what he was trying to accomplish. And unfortunately, Ginsburg didn't step down while Obama was still president, and she died under Trump. So he forcefully rammed that through to get another conservative justice on there. So I think he had a lot of good things done, but I think a lot of the issues were not, he wasn't able to get everything done that he wanted to because of how obstructionist the Republicans were. All right. But going back to, sorry, interrupt your prompt, but Trump.
That's why I think it started with two steps forward in history, one step back. And then the explosion of Trump was the response of mostly, I feel, angry, white, racist America.
I don't think they're racist. I think they're afraid of change. I'll disagree with you there. I think they don't like seeing the Cheerios commercial with a gay interracial couple. They don't know why they're threatened by it, but they're threatened by it. I think they're just not used to seeing a non-white world.
When I say racist, what I mean is like, I don't think what I'm saying is like maybe it's more so. And again, this is one point in time we need to have a serious conversation on what does racist mean? What is the definition of racism to different cultures and different races in America? But I think it was fear of a black man in charge and fear of losing identity and culture. And white America, for the most part, and again, I'm speaking rhetoric here, but white America, for the most part, was like, whoa, things are going to start changing. We're going to see all black shows, or we're going to see all. It's like you've been living in white America since you were born.
Can I tell you what I think
the biggest fear was? Of course they're afraid of change. Yeah.
I think their biggest fear was that black people are going to treat white people the way white people have been treated black people.
I agree with that. Yeah. And again, that's why, and I think you and I will probably agree with this. Fear is a horrible, horrible motivator.
100%
for policy.
100%.
I think that's it. I think they were afraid of getting lost. And again, this is a connection that I've noticed too, teaching up here in New York, because I taught, like I said, I taught in Canarsie and Jamaica, Queens. Those centers of those urban cultures are very, very similar to rural schools and communities that I've taught at in terms of the religious beliefs. I worked at a school in Canarsie this past year where I had Haitian and Jamaican kids that didn't come. I mean, not a couple of years back. And even when I was in Jamaica, Queens, wouldn't come to school on Halloween because their parents didn't want them outside of the house on Halloween because of
the devil's holiday.
Yeah. It's the devil's holiday. They didn't want them out there. And there have been things that, you know, of course, like I said, I laugh because some of the things that I do up here in New York City schools, I would be fired at in schools in Alabama and South Carolina. Like, you know, supporting our students, we had gay pride flags all up in the school and, you know, saying, we support you, we love you, we're here for you. And of course, people, you know, on the right and the far right, a lot of times, not you, but the religious that still believe homosexuality is a sin, which I know we'll probably get to that at some point too. I think, you know, they would see something like that and go, oh my God, you're indoctrinating. And I'm like, no, I'm just acknowledging that they exist and that they have a safe space with me. See, and they can trust me as a teacher.
Again, we'll disagree about this. I think homosexuality is a sin, but I don't think it is the sin. I don't think it is the biggest sin. I know a lot of people refer to the Old Testament about it being an abomination, but if you notice when Paul talks about it being a sin, he also mentions drunkenness. He also mentions pride, lying. So he's not just singling out homosexuality the way that a ton of people tend to do. And it's not.
Well, he's also not talking about homosexual. I'm going to push back here. He's also not talking about homosexuality. I know you're going to say
he was talking about the long haired prostitutes. You know where I'm going. You're talking about the long haired prostitutes at the temple. Yep. So
he's talking about the orgies at the temple.
Yeah.
And so, more so pedophilia than anything.
Again, we'll agree to disagree on that. But I think it is needed. And I understand that the joke is on May 31st, everything's gray. June 1st, everything's rainbow. But back to July 1st, everything's back to gray. But it is needed. And you do need to know some of the history of Stonewall and some of the other histories of gay rights activists, Harvey Milk and all of that, because there it is a part of history. American history is very messy. And I know we got to wrap up because your kids are ready to come in. But I know American history is a very messy history. And too often we try to give the sanitized version of history instead of the dirty, messy version, the Tulsa race massacre, the Trail of Tears, slavery,
I didn't even hear about the Tulsa massacre until I was in college. I was like, why the hell was I not taught this in high school?
I was a history minor. So that was one of the American history courses I took, that did talk about that, but I know we got to wrap things up because you got the kiddos coming in. Where can we find you on social media, Brandon?
Yeah. If you want to find me on social media, you can find me, at Instagram at @TriolaMan. You can find me on TikTok. My account is literally at Brandon Triola, but because we're getting ready to launch the trailer for Brooklyn Start, we've started two new pages on Instagram. It's literally Watch Brooklyn Start. And it's the same exact thing on TikTok. You just go to @ Watch Brooklyn Start. And then you can also go to brooklynstart.com. You can find out all about the show, how we created it, what's it about. And I know we'll talk about that at some point because, you know, as a liberal, I know everyone's probably going, oh, it's just going to be some liberal show about it. But no, we really attack pseudo liberalism in the show. That's something to discuss. No, that's something that disgusts me more than anything is pseudo liberalism and white people just writing checks instead of actually getting involved in communities.
That's what I respect about you is because you get down and dirty with it and you're not afraid to call out people for their bullshit. So,
and that's what I respect about you.
Well, thank you.
So we're going to have fun.
Yeah, we will. All right. I'm on social media on Twitter at @DavidSears75, Instagram at @DavidSears1982. Same with my Threads account. Don't follow us on Facebook. I just post memes on Facebook. So don't try to be my friend if you end up watching this. Brandon, do you have any final thoughts you want to say before we wrap this up?
Let's see. Go Yankees and Roll Tide.
Go Braves, chop on and Roll Tide.
We got half of it right.
There we go. Brandon, this is fun. I look forward to doing this with you. And tune in each week. We'll have this podcasted on Sunday. It'll air on Tony Curry Radio. It's at 7 a.m. Monday through Friday. So if you like it, share, subscribe, and like everything. We'll be on all major podcasting platforms. And thank you for listening. And Brandon, I look forward to doing this with you every week.
Same here, David. Take care.
You too. Bye.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.